Welcome to Hope Is Here. My name is Greg Horn. We are continuing our conversation with Dr. Melinda Mora, and our topic is one that you don't hear much about, especially in the faith circles, and it's suicide. And unfortunately, so many people are impacted by that, but we don't like to talk about it because it's painful, it's awkward, and unfortunately, those of us like me in the church have not done a good job at times of addressing that. But we started that yesterday talking about just the impact and what to do if you're feeling suicidal and how to help. And if you missed yesterday's program, I want to encourage you to check out that 14-minute program. You can go to our website, hopeishere.today. That's hopeishere.today, and there's resources available to help you. But today we're going to talk about bereavement when you lose someone. Before we do get to that, we ran out of time yesterday. I do want to ask you, Dr. Mora, that we've been through this pandemic for going on almost 7 months now, and a lot of isolation has happened with people for protection. But what type of impact have you seen with suicide because of this pandemic?
Yeah, this is a really provocative question and one that a lot of people are very concerned about. We've had a lot of people being very alarmed, a lot of sort of mental health forecasters, policy folks, worried about the impact of the pandemic on suicide rates. And the bottom line is we just don't know, because suicide rate research or data don't become available until 2 years after a year. So we won't know for 2 years exactly what the impact is on suicide rates. But what I can tell you, and these are from experts of mine who work at CDC, people who are epidemiologists who are looking at all the numbers kind of behind the scenes. And what they tell me is, yes, we are seeing an increase in suicidal ideation among younger people. We're probably seeing it in other people as well. I mean, all age ranges, but particularly younger people. But what we're also seeing is a higher utilization of crisis services, such as the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline or the Crisis Text Line or the Disaster Helpline, which is, I think, a subsidiary of the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. So it's not so much that we're seeing an increase in suicide death rates. That's what my epidemiologist friends are telling me that are peeking at the data, but we're seeing a higher utilization of these crisis services, and people are talking more about suicide. So that's good news. That's very yes. good news. Now, the concerning part of this is the impact of the economic recession, the economic mm-hmm. impacts of the pandemic. We do know that there is a relationship between economic recession, like we saw in 2008, and increases in suicide rates. So that is of enormous concern, particularly among vulnerable populations such as the hospitality industry. Mm-hmm. I am incredibly concerned about people who work in restaurants and bars and the hospitality industry, because I think the decimation of that industry might potentially have an impact on those folks, though I'm very concerned about that. But we're just going to take a wait and see approach, and in the meantime, just support our restaurants.
Yes, absolutely. That's a great point. Order that carry out safely while the weather's good. Patios are available, so please do that. Or reach out to friends that you have that are in the hospitality industry. Just a phone call or a text saying, hey, I'm thinking about you. A simple question, how are you doing? I mean, that can be life-saving for people, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this connection, it's a sense of connection. People are very concerned about the social isolation. But what's interesting is we're able to use technology. While it's not the same as being with people in person, Zoom and other FaceTime and other technologies have been life-saving. And so I think reaching out to people, letting them know you care, checking in on them, Zooming with them, these are all important things that we can do during this time.
Well, a topic that you don't hear much about is the bereavement part of suicide after someone has ended their life prematurely. And, Dr. Mora, talk about the impact, the ripple effect that has on people. I know a lot of times people think, well, people will be better off without me, but it just doesn't impact them and maybe just a handful of people. It has a lot bigger impact, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and the problem and the sad thing is that so many people who are suicidal don't really understand the impact it will have. And so if they don't say anything to anybody and no one gets a chance to intervene, then oftentimes not only are their life is lost, but the burden of that death on the community that they live in is huge. And we oftentimes don't consider that. So there's some very important research that I was actually able to be a part of. Dr. Julie Serrell led a team of researchers several years ago in the Military Suicide Bereavement Study, where for the first time we really uncovered both the numbers of people that are impacted by suicide loss, but then also what does that impact look like? And we found out that for every person who dies by suicide, there are 135 people who are exposed to that death. And of those 135, there are about 48 individuals who are, because of their perception of closeness, about 48 individuals who are impacted significantly by that death. And that impact there are certain health outcomes such as higher levels of depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, and then another study indicated that those individuals might also engage in suicide attempt behavior. So the impact of suicide is very significant, even among those non-blood relatives, non-kin relatives, people who just felt close to the individual who died. And so we really have to start paying better attention to those people who are impacted and exposed, and then doing something to help them. I run a suicide bereavement group at Eastern Kentucky University, and there are others. There's another one in Lexington that's at the Church of the Good Shepherd that's also run for suicide bereaved. And these are individuals who can, for a long period of time, be very vulnerable. And we really have to do a better job of recognizing the impact of this loss on them and then also helping them in that grief journey, because it is an unusual grief journey compared to other kinds of losses.
Well, one of the things when you and I have met recently, we're discussing things. I was asking questions, and you made this great statement that's really stuck with me since then. Sometimes the thought process when somebody is suicidal is that they don't want to be a burden to people, don't want to bother them. But you simply said, just ask them that. ask them if it would be, right?
Yeah. I mean, I do that a lot when I work with people in my private practice. They'll say to me, I think my loved ones, my wife, my husband, whatever, will be better off. And I'm like, well, have you asked them? Because I think you should ask them. Yeah. And that changes the whole conversation.
Yeah.
Particularly if they do ask them and then they get the response that it really surprises them. And that is the disconnect with suicidal ideation. People who are engaging in suicidal ideation really don't understand. I mean, there's a lot of science around what happens to the brain and sort of how they think. But we really have to help them understand that, they are not alone. There are repercussions to this. There are lots of people who will suffer for the rest of their lives. And it is important to stay here because, we are all connected and we all impact each other, but we also have incredible power to help each other. And so I think we can't allow fear of, asking the wrong question to keep us from asking the potentially life-saving question, so.
Well, and the other thing is that I've learned from being in the ministry side now for almost 20 years that when I've encountered somebody's death that's ended prematurely by suicide, their close family, friends always make the same statement. If I would have known, I would have done anything. You found that to be true?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the problem. These individuals who are suicidal are suffering in silence. And if they would just utter something, if they just felt, but again, they feel like they're a burden, and so they're sort of mind reading, the people around them. But I would just encourage anybody who might be having thoughts of suicide to say something to somebody around them, just to kind of check that. Or reach out to a professional, or reach out to the National Suicide Prevention and Lifeline number. There are lots of resources. There are lots of people, particularly here in Central Kentucky, that can help. At the EKU Psychology Clinic, we provide suicide-focused treatment for everybody. And we're now doing it via telehealth. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly affordable. It's low to no cost for our sessions. And so we've got some of the cutting-edge treatment right here in Central Kentucky. But it really takes that individual having the strength and reaching out and saying, I'm having these thoughts. I don't know what to do about it. Would you help me? And there's lots of help for that.
Well, if you're driving, you're like, oh, I want to get this information. We'll get this from Dr. Moore and have it listed with the podcast available later today at hopeishere.today. That's hopeishere.today. If somebody's listening and, there's like, okay, what if my family member, I sense they are maybe having suicidal thoughts, and if I do ask them that question, hey, are you having suicidal thoughts, how should they handle that if the person does answer with them, say, yeah, I have had that. How should they respond?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important for, number one, everyone to just get comfortable asking that question. Are you having suicidal thoughts? Have you thought about killing yourself? And then asking the individual, do you have a plan? And then trying to find out if they have means. But you don't freak out. You don't, run them to the emergency room. Just sit and listen and talk with them. Talk them through it. And I think sometimes that requires tolerating a lot of discomfort. particularly parents who cannot imagine their children having suicidal thoughts. You know, oftentimes they want to kind of shut them down or say, no, you're not, or don't say that, or don't feel that way. Well, actually, you've been given an opportunity, if your child's willing to tell you that they're having suicidal thoughts, an opportunity to intervene and help and perhaps save your child's life. So I think it's a wonderful opportunity to do something significant to help. I think you just have to listen. You know, God gave us two ears for a reason. One mouth, two ears, right? You've heard that a million times.
Love it.
Yeah. But I think also recognizing that we have resources available and getting that person to a professional, if they're having, you know, suicidal thoughts that are pretty, you know, sort of constant, that are pretty pressing, you know, it's not just like a sort of a passive thing. I think getting them to a professional immediately. But I think no matter what kind of suicidal thoughts they're having, even if it's just passing thoughts or occasionally, really talking to somebody who knows what they're doing. And you can find that there are searchable databases on the internet. CAMS, dashcare.com has a searchable database of clinicians who do suicide-focused treatment. Also calling the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That is an excellent resource, or the crisis text line. Or calling Eastern Kentucky University Psychology Clinic, because we do this kind of care all the time. And we are happy to do an assessment of somebody who might be having suicidal thoughts and just seeing what would be most appropriate. But I can tell you that the most important thing you can do is listen.
Yeah. It really is just listening, and I've had to ask people, you know, do you have a plan? Or I've also said, I want you to promise me that you will contact me if you get to that point. Mm-hmm. And there's something, I think, just because I had people do that to me, just knowing that one person cares, man, that can save somebody's life, can't it?
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of urban legends about people, you know, saying, you know, I won't kill myself if just one person smiles. I mean, that actually emanates from a real story that occurred out in San Francisco.
Really?
And a young man who killed himself but left a note in his apartment saying, if one person had smiled at me. So I think just being mindful of how we interact with people just out in public when we don't know who they are. But if somebody, you know, is indicating that they are, you know, perhaps struggling or in crisis, you know, I think you're saying to them, are you having thoughts of suicide? Because I would want to know. I care about you. I would want to know. And then if they indicate that they are, then getting them some professional help. I would also encourage people to – there's all sorts of great resources for the public, you know, and asking questions around access to lethal means is really important. There's a wonderful campaign at Harvard University called Means Matters, and they've got these free downloadable scripts for community members, clergy, not just professionals, yeah, but all sorts of people. But how do you talk to people about access to highly irreversible forms of death like firearms? You know, wow, or other lethal means. And we have to be willing to go there as well, also asking questions around that.
And who is that through?
It's called Harvard University's campaign Means Matters. It's meansmatters.com.
Wow. Yeah. How about that? That's great. And I know for somebody listening, that definitely would be helpful to them, and we'll have all that information on the website. There was one quote that I really liked by Viktor Frankl that talked about you know, compassion part of suicide. And can you share that with us? Do you know that, or the quote by Viktor?
Viktor Frankl is one of my heroes, one of my personal heroes. And he's really a big believer in self-overcoming. And he said, even the helpless victim of a hopeless situation facing a fate he cannot change may rise above himself, may grow beyond himself, and by so doing, change himself, turn a personal tragedy into a triumph. You know, he writes in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, that, you know, we don't get happiness just by finding happiness, but we get happiness through finding meaning and purpose in life. And I think that's what's happened to me in my own life after losing my husband. It was an incredibly unhappy period, as you can imagine. But I have found happiness through purpose and meaning. And I think that's how we find it. Even when we're suffering, there are things that we can do. Even if we're not feeling happy, we can definitely find purpose and meaning. And through that, we ultimately find happiness.
Well, unfortunately, out of time, but I'm going to see if Dr. Moore will stay with us for one more program and talk more about this bereavement when you lose a loved one to suicide. So I hope you'll join us tomorrow. Invite a friend. I've been talking with Dr. Melinda Moore. I'm Greg Horn, and this is Hope is Here.
If you have been blessed by Hope is Here, would you consider making a donation to help this ministry continue to reach thousands in Central Kentucky every day? It's simple and safe. Go to our website at hopeishere.today, where you can make a safe and secure online donation, or you can find our address to mail a check. All donations are tax deductible and they are greatly appreciated. Please make your donation today at hopeishere.today. Again, that's hopeishere.today.